Podcasting from the beautiful San Francisco Bay Area in California, this is Venus Rising, where we discuss all things related to big fertility and encourage you to think beyond the masses. I'm Jennifer Law, your host, bringing you the best and most up-to-date conversations on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health. Welcome to Venus Rising. My guest today is Karen Hoffman. And Karen has an international background, having lived and worked on three continents. She was born and raised in South Africa, and soon you'll get to listen to her beautiful accent, where she earned her bachelor's degree in business administration from the University of Pretoria, majoring in human resource management and political science. Subsequently, she moved to London, followed by her relocation to the San Francisco Bay Area in 2014, where she lives now, and she provides real estate solutions to local as well as her international clientele. Prior to her career in real estate, she spent over two decades working with global corporations in the fields of business development, investment banking, and financial services. She is the director of the San Mateo County chapter of Polkadot Powerhouse. And for those of you listening from around the world, San Mateo County is in the San Francisco Bay Area. And the Polkadot Powerhouse is an international networking organization for women. Karen is also a keen triathlete, and she enjoys mountain biking, skiing, and surfing. But today, Karen is here with me to talk about her very personal journey with infertility, which I think will be of a lot of interest to our listeners here on Venus Rising. So, Karen, welcome to Venus Rising. Thank you for being my guest.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, I have to tell our listeners that you are a personal friend of mine, and through our husband's mutual work, that's how we came to know one another. And so we've enjoyed getting to know you guys over the years as friends as well.
I was just telling my mother this morning, actually, how instrumental you have been on my journey of acceptance. So I just thank you for...
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, well, let's talk about that journey of acceptance. So your husband is Carl. And you and Carl have been married for how long now?
15 years.
15 years. And at what point, like before you got married, did you and Carl talk about the fact that you wanted to have children, you hoped to have children? What was that conversation like when you were dating before you got married?
Yeah, so our big plan was always we wanted to have, well, I wanted to have two, he wanted to have three. So that was always kind of still okay, up for debate. But we definitely, our family was definitely on the maps for Carl and I, even when we, so we were living in England at the point, and we lived in a suburb called Hampton. You're all probably familiar with Hampton Court Palace. It's about a mile from there. And we were renting a house. Then we sold our condo in the city, and we decided we're going to buy a house in the home counties. So the home counties are like the suburbs. And we even planned that, okay, we need to be close to the train station. Of course, once Junior comes, I just need an easy commute into the city for work. So even, you know, and that was even before we got married, that was all the talk of where are we going to live so that I can easily commute into the city and when the babies come. So yeah, that was definitely on our big plan.
Yeah. And at what point did you begin trying to start your family and find out that things weren't going as planned?
We were married for a year when I stopped taking contraceptives. I just couldn't get that word. We were married for about a year, and within 3 months, I wasn't pregnant. Now, I was at that point in my I think I was about 33, which is really still young. And the doctors didn't want really anything to do with me. They're like, no, you're still young. But I just knew there was something. I could just feel something wasn't right. So I went to see a private doctor, and he then referred me to a OBGYN who specializes in infertility. And that's when the... it's like a roller coaster of tests, and I went in for surgery, and I discovered I'm covered in endometriosis. So they cleaned all of that up, and they say, no, everything now will happen. And we went on holiday. We actually went to Cuba because they say, yeah, that's you have to go on holiday, you know, you relax, and then you'll conceive. And didn't happen. Then we started on Carl's journey of research of, okay, well, maybe it's him. And it really turned out that we were both challenged in the areas of being able to procreate.
And that's actually pretty common. You know, most people just think when a couple can't conceive, what's wrong with the woman? When yes. In fact, sometimes it's what's wrong with the woman, what's wrong with the man, what's wrong with the woman and the man, or everything seems to be fine for woman and man, but for some reason this couple can't get pregnant. So I think that's important for people to know that it's a lot of times it's both and.
Yes. Yeah. But it's very true what you say, because it's always for women. And in our case, it's we were both challenged in it. So Carl had surgeries and to see that everything's clean and clear and then everything was, but it was just still, we just could not conceive.
And did you go down the IVF route? Did you actually try that?
Yes. So then we started that journey, and that's a very painful journey and memory of doctor's appointment. And we had it on, being living in England, we got it on the National Health. So we did access to great, great fertility doctors. And I remember we were on holiday in Florida with his family, and we were waiting to hear, it can take up to a year for your case to be seen and approved. And we had all our things done in April, but we were at that point seen already as age sensitive. Yeah, I was only 34, you know, I wasn't that old. And this was in June, and I remember saying to Carl, you know what, we could get home and our papers could be there that we can start the proceedings, the IVF process. And true to God, it was there when we came back. And then it's doctor appointment upon doctor appointment, and tests upon tests, and injections. You know, Carl cleared his calendar. We started end of September, I would say, of that year, we started the treatment. And for those who's not familiar with it, you spray this thing into your nose that shut down your reproductive system. So you put yourself basically into menopause. And then, I mean, you get hot flashes, you forget stuff, you are emotional. I remember I was working in London for property fund management, and I would just like sit in meetings and have these hot flashes and then start crying. And as Carl, bless him, he cleared his schedule from traveling, and he attended every doctor's appointment. And it was early in the morning, it was raining miserable in London. And then I started injections. So now I'm injecting myself once a day, and had to be at the same time. And Carl at that point felt really helpless, because, you know, I'm going through all these emotions, I'm injecting myself, and he can't do anything. You know, he can just be there to support me. And he was a wonderful, wonderful support. And then the day comes that you go for your egg harvest. And, you know, Carl and I have got a great relationship. We laugh a lot. Humor is what keeps us together. And so I'm in the theater, they're taking out they're harvesting the eggs. And he, it's kind of really funny now to think of it. He gets this little box with my eggs in, and he has to go into London. I was in Putney in hospital. Now he has to go into London, where he now has to deposit his sample and then back doing it. And he said to me, I had a good team talk with the guys before. And the team talk worked. It worked. You know, they called me the next day and said, well, I should probably have had a better team talk with my eggs, though. They harvested two eggs. And one was premature and died, and the other one they could inject with Carl's super sperm. And it just, the baby or the embryo really developed. It got planted in that Friday, and bam, I was pregnant. Then the weekend before it was on my birthday, November 17, that I started bleeding. Like 6 weeks after I was pregnant, but I really did everything to the T. I had no alcohol, no caffeine, no nothing. I really took care of myself. I didn't run, as you mentioned, I'm a triathlete. I didn't do any running. I was just walking. I did walking and swimming to stay into shape. And I started bleeding. I was in bed for 4 days, but the doctors just stay in bed. And at this point, I was kind of obsessed. but I would like to do a pregnancy test every day to just see if I'm still pregnant. And on the first day after I started bleeding, I was in excruciating pain, went to St. Peter's Hospital, where I actually lost the baby in the toilet there when I had to give him a urine sample. And it's just at, I just knew that it was gone. I just knew that that's where I miscarried.
Yeah, I mean, that must have been a really sad couple of days and moment when you knew at that point that you were no longer pregnant.
Yes, it's a very empty feeling. I mean, I physically felt empty in my womb, and obviously I just felt empty.
Yeah, and I feel, again, I have not had these kind of struggles in my own personal life, but from other women that I've spoken to, you know, they talk about feeling this, being on a roller coaster, you know, all the tests and the doctors and the highs and the lows, sort of, you know, dashed hopes. When you actually accomplish getting pregnant, you know, okay, well, we can do it. And then you lose it. I mean, at that point, did you decide to try again? Or did you say, we're going to get off this roller coaster?
Carl and I made the decision from the beginning that we're going to do it once. And we did it once. It was never for us an option after that. I think if I had better results, if I should have had more eggs, if I carried through my pregnancy, we might have tried it, had another go. I don't know. But we made the decision really from the beginning, and we just stuck to it.
And was that because you just knew how intense it was with all the pokes and the needles and the exams? Or was it you just wanted to try it once, and if it worked, great. If it didn't, you were just going to kind of get on with your life?
We actually made that decision even before the treatment started. But we'll do this, we're going to do it, you know, once. Like I say, if it got better results, I don't know what would have happened. But after we didn't have the good results, it was never even. You know, we've seen too many people, I've heard of too many people who spend so much money on these, you know, it's expensive.
And you didn't have those costs, right, because of the National Health Services. So yours wasn't an economic decision. I mean, some couples literally say we can only afford one cycle or two or whatever. Yeah. Yeah, it is quite expensive. And so how should people speak to you? Like, what were the things that people said to you after? You know, you always hear that, oh, when are you going to have kids? Why aren't you having kids? What's wrong with you? You know, and then, you know, I mean, people like to just be kind of nosy about personal things. I mean, how do you respond to some of the things that, you know, give listeners advice. Don't say these kind of things or say these kind of things.
You know, I was very honest from the beginning. I just decided, because I think it's an extremely rude question to ask someone, when are you starting a family? It's, frankly, it's none of your business. So I was, Carl still kind of, he tried to sugarcoat it at the beginning, so, oh, well, we're still trying. But then people would go like, oh, well, you need a bit of help in that department. People are just insensitive. So I was very open from the beginning. I would just say, well, you know what? We're having issues. We're having challenges to get pregnant. And, you know, and I would just lay it out. And I remember I told my mother, and my mother was like, oh, that's rude, because you're making people, you know, in South Africa, people are very proper. You're making people feel uncomfortable. I'm like, okay, they make me feel uncomfortable. They started it.
Yeah, good for you.
So that's what I want to say to people, you know, be honest. Because if you're not honest, if you say to them, well, we're still trying, the next time they see you, they're going to ask the same question. And you owe it to yourself just to be honest. Because you know what? It's not your fault. It's not working.
Yeah. And what do you say now? Because there's probably people that you meet now that say, oh, you don't have children? Why don't you have children? Do you still get that, even though that's been many years ago now in your life?
Yeah, we definitely still get that a lot. You know, people now would say, oh, did you decide not to have children? And I would be honest and say, no, actually, we couldn't have, and we lost our baby at 6 weeks. So again, I'm very honest about it, because it wasn't my decision. It was God's decision. It wasn't mine. And I just really, I feel that to be, you know, to be open about it.
Yeah. And what do you know now that you wish you maybe, I mean, this is armchair quarterbacking, and sometimes, you know, you don't know that you would do things differently, but knowing, you know, you see the work I do, you know a lot more now because you've been through it. Like, what do you know now that you wish you would have known then that might help people that are listening now that are in that process of finding out why can't we conceive, or they're already down the IVF route? You know, is there any, you know, words of advice or wisdom that you would share with women that are struggling with conceiving right now?
You know, I think I would always advise against IVF, because, you know, even though they tell you this, that, and the other can go wrong, you know, I've been in menopause for the last 10 years. I've been in perimenopause. I'll never get my figure back. I struggle to lose weight, and that's all because of that. Now, maybe again, if it was successful, it would have been all worth it, but it wasn't. So it's a gamble. You have to be really sure that you're okay with the consequences when it doesn't happen. I think sometimes we all just look at the happy ending the way we want it. Oh, I'm going through all this and then I'm going to have a little baby. Guess what? It doesn't always work that way. And, you know, and that's something, Jennifer, you said to me, I'll never forget, we were at your house in Tahoe the first time, and we sat on the deck and or on the jetty, and we were talking about it. And you said to me, Karen, have you ever thought that maybe you or Carl has got a genetic disease that would have carried over into the child? And I think that was that aha moment that made the peace for me. But we just don't know, you know, it's just the hand that I was dealt. And I know that doesn't really answer your question of what's my words of advice to people. I can just say, really look, don't be realistic. Be realistic knowing that there's a chance it can't work. And what if it doesn't work? Are you willing to deal with those consequences?
Yeah. And, you know, you and Carl, I mean, because we know you so well, my family, you still seem to have a pretty good life. Even though you wanted to have children, you hoped that children would have been part of your family, but you're still a complete family. And it doesn't seem like it's robbed you of any joy. You live very full lives.
Yeah, it definitely has not robbed us of any joy. Definitely not. You know, at the beginning, after I lose the baby, I lost it. You kind of feel that it's only your pain. And I kind of ignored Carl's pain for a long time until one day that it just remember, I also lost a child. And that's when our healing together started. You know, our marriage is very strong. It's stronger than it was before IVF. We definitely don't feel robbed. We make the best of it. You know, we're just living to the fullest.
Yeah, and that's really sweet that he said he too. I mean, I lost a child too. I mean, he wasn't carrying the pregnancy, obviously, but it was a loss. It was a death. It was a grief. Grieving moment. And, you know, you and I have talked about, you know, a failed pregnancy, a loss of a pregnancy is similar to the grief of losing a loved one. I mean, it is a loved one. It's your future child. So there is grief there for you and for him. Yeah. And you're speaking out. I mean, you're going to be putting your story in a book, I hear.
Yes. Yes. So I've been invited to be part of an anthology called Don't Be Invisible, Be Fabulous. It's just really important for me. It's part of a healing. You know, and my mom, when I told her about the book, when I told her about your podcast, she said to me, are you ready for it? And I said to her, yes, I really feel that I'm as healed as I'll be. And now I want to spread my story. And if I can encourage, empower any other woman or any other couple with it, I'll be really honored and blessed to do that.
Yeah. And that is part of, you know, like when you were saying, I was always honest when people would say, when are you going to start your family? Or why don't you have children? All those little nosy kind of questions, you know, your reaction was to be honest. And so telling your story in this book, being on a podcast is another, you know, layer of that honesty.
Yes. Yeah.
Telling your story and not, you know, sugarcoating it or, but it's good because it's your voice. because other people like to get in your business and tell your story. And what you you know what you should do? I always get mad when people tell me, you know what you should do?
Yeah, I'm sure I with you.
And I'm sure you and Carl got a lot of that unsolicited advice, you know, of what you should do.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and we talked about how insensitive people are. I'll never forget my cousin, she's a bit younger than me, and we were pregnant at the same time. She was a bit further along, and she then gave birth to my little second cousin called Caleb, and he's the sweetest kid. He's a teenager now, but, you know, I'll never forget at his christening, I was standing with him in my arms, and her mother came to me, and she said, it's knowing what I've just gone through. Oh, you look really good with a baby in your arms. It really suits you. So that is the type of things that insensitivities that you get from people. And some of them they don't think, some do think about it. But it definitely is a painful, lonely journey sometimes.
Yeah, and people say things like, well, you know, you can just go adopt some kids. You know, I mean, that's a solution, and that solves your desire to have your own children, or, you know. But yeah, there's just all this advice that's, I guess people are, they think they're being well-meaning, but without realizing how hurtful it is to them.
Yeah. I think people do think, you know me, I'm never an advice giver for that reason.
Yeah, you learn. Yeah. And so did you go through a period where it was hard for you when a close friend would say, oh, we just found out we're pregnant, or, you know, the baby shower era? It's like my single friends who want to be married hate, like, oh my God, I went to another bridal shower. I don't want to be, you know, at another wedding again when I'm the single person. I mean, did you have those kind of feelings too?
I definitely did. You know, my cousin, who I told you earlier on, I hosted her baby shower shortly after I had a miscarriage, but it's something that, now looking back, I was an idiot doing it. She would have so understood if I didn't, but I wanted to prove to myself that I can do it. And that's the last baby shower I attended. She had a few kids afterwards, and I was invited to, and I just said to everyone, I'm sorry, I just can't do it. And I was open to her about it, and she was never angry. She always respected.
Oh, that's nice.
So yeah, I've attended a few baby showers since I moved here, but definitely in England after shortly, I just didn't. No, I just couldn't do it to myself. If I didn't feel strong enough to do it, I just didn't, and I didn't.
Yeah. And you have you sort of had a sort of women, you as far as friendships, have you had people sort of gravitate toward you that have also similar stories of childlessness? I mean, do you have sort of your people, your tribe, where you can just sort of all, you know, be together and support one another, you know, your own kind of community? Not that you don't have other friends that are married and have children or are single or whatever, but sometimes have you sort of just carved out friendships with people that have?
No, I tried that in England to kind of have a little support group, but it just turned into a pity party. And I was like, yeah, no, I don't want that. But I've naturally, since we moved here, we have gravitated towards people either with, like you and Dan, all the children, or people who don't have children. But that's just something that happened naturally. It was never that I seeked it out. Especially since I moved here, I never seeked it out. It just naturally happened. And I'm kind of trying to think now, it's actually only one couple that we're super good friends with them.
But I think when you don't have children, either by choice or by not your choice, it expands your sense of family. And so, like, I know that when we're together with you and our kids are with us, we feel like you're family. You know, I mean, my children are adults. I'm sure if they were little, they'd probably call you Auntie Karen or Uncle Carl. But they're, you know, they're young adults, so they don't. But I mean, it really it allows us to be much more creative in what makes a family.
Exactly. You know, and I think of people that God has put in our on our journey, like again, your family, and you know, we've got a few St. Carlos families who, and another Danville family with young kids, and the kids absolutely, they adore us and we adore them. And it's, I mean, again, I just feel that God puts people in your, on your path, which that should be with you. And, you know, this the St. Carlos family, they've got five girls. And I absolutely, for the older ones, I've got like a big sister role. And for the little ones, I'm their auntie. And Carl's the cool uncle. So, yeah, now it does definitely expand your family. Since we've been here, we've been spoiled for choice Christmases, Thanksgiving, with invitations we've been getting. So we've definitely been accepted into a lot of families.
And are there some of the holidays that are particularly challenging? I mean, I know I speak to infertile couples, and like Mother's Day and Father's Day are just notoriously bad days for them.
Mother's Day is very, very hard for me, because people, again, they try to be nice. Like, I remember I was working out at the gym on Mother's Day. For instance, I will never go to church on Mother's Day because it's just sensitive for me. It's just hurtful. And walked out of a gym one morning, and the gym reception gave me a rose. And I go, oh, happy Mother's Day. And before I could think, I turned around and said, well, I'm not a mother. And I was like, I said, okay, I'm so sorry. I said, I'm not a mother, but how should you know? And he said, don't worry, happy Women's Day. And I was just like,
good save.
Yeah, he did do a good save. So Mother's Day for me is a really hard one.
And is Father's Day equally hard for Carl, or is it not?
No, it's not.
That doesn't surprise me. I don't know why, but yeah, I would just think for women, as women, we're just, you know, we're more close to our mothers, and, you know, and we're just more motherly by, you know, just nature, or by how we were raised, or, you know, told to be. Yeah. So, well, you know, I really appreciate your telling your story, because it's vulnerable, you know, to put yourself out there. And, but I do think our Venus Rising listeners will really appreciate hearing somebody who lived it and walked it. So thank you for being my guest today on Venus Rising, Karen.
Thank you for asking me. I really, really appreciate it. And yeah, if I can help any, just support any woman or couple who goes through it, I'll be honored.
Thanks for listening to Venus Rising. If you like our show and want to know more, check us out at cbc-network.org. Leave us a review on iTunes too, and join us next week for another conversation on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health.